number 11750,
Reel 12. Mr. Lineker, Reel 12. You've just got now to this this coal mine, E535 at Sosnovich. What happened? When were you started? Were you given any training at all before you started work?
None. None at all. You were just taken there and thrown in at the deep end. You had an issue of an helmet, a lamp, knee pads, and that was it. And working clothes, but not brand new things, just an old overall, an old boiler suit type of thing. The lamp was carbide because there was no gas as such as we have in British mines, majority of British mines. It was carbide lamps, like the old-fashioned cycle lamp you used to have, you know. And with no training at all, and it was so old, that mine was. It must have been bloody older than I was now, at my age. Because...
What happened the first time you went down it? That must have been a bit of a...
Frightened to death. Claustrophobic.
How did you get down? What method?
Shaft. By the shaft. Like...
In a lift?
Yeah. Step inside, a big iron gate comes down, and it drops like a bloody bird plummeting out of the sky. There's no gentle descent at all. And bags of noise with bloody chains and everything rattling. You think you're going to hell itself. And, as I say, it was a bloody sure it's older than I was. Because, believe it or not, then, and that was 1940, going up from 43, 44, they had ponies down, yeah? Young ponies that dragged the trucks along the trolleys with coal in and timber for doing the roofs and all this performance. And they stayed down there like they did in England for a set period of time. They were brought up to the service to wander about, have a bit of fresh air and light, and then down again until they snuffed it. And there was three shifts, 6:22 to 10:10 to 6. But it wasn't a straight out 8-hour job, because you had to be counted, brought, paraded in the compound, counted. And of course, the two and two makes bloody five with some of them that count, so they start again. Time's going, and eventually you march to the pit head, the shaft, handed over to a civilian, to the Steiger, which is the German for the sort of an overseer of a section.
And how many would there be in a shift that you'd be handed over to this Steiger? Roughly.
I would say 50, 40, 50. First, though, I'm overstepping myself. You would, before you got to the Steiger, you was taken to the lamp room. You see, I'm forgetting that. Handed out with your lamp, and your knee pads, your helmet, your clothes.
So they were handed out each shift. You didn't keep them
at the pit. Do you see, they were civilian pits, and it was their gear. They didn't belong to the army. The only thing that belonged to the army was you, your body. What went on south was the civilians. And of course we collected that, and then marched to the, what's it, handed over to the Steiger. He had to know how many he was decking, so he's that bloody counting. Then you go down in bundles of 10 or something like that, down the shaft.
Were you guarded? I mean...
Not on the shaft, but who could get out? You were right up to the bloody gate, you was guarded, you see. But whenever you're in the shaft, I mean, that's the only time you had no bugger around, you're on your own. So when you got out at the bottom, civilians again, in charge of it, overseer.
So no troops down, no German guard?
Oh, no, no. And then you walk then to where you're going to work.
And you said it was an old mine. Would that be a fair way away?
It was, let's say, 8-9 foot ceiling, circular banded, tunnel effect. At the bottom of the shaft, maybe bigger, maybe as big as this flat, two double story flat. But as you went further in, it came lower and lower, till the highest part in that particular where I worked was, what, 8-9 foot high, that circular.
And how far was it in?
Well, it could vary, because you didn't always go to the same place to work. You might go in one civilian, and he worked in a 9 foot high job. He could work in a place where it was as high as back to where it was at the shaft, as high as a house. Or you could even get to the other extreme, meter high.
But what I mean is, how far away from the pit?
Now then, there are three types of workings. Now then, the depth of going in, you could be half a mile, three quarters of a mile, a third of a mile. And you walked in, no transport like you see in our modern pits.
And how many would there be to a civilian miner? I mean, you know.
Half a dozen, obviously. Or five, say, a shaft load of 10, you could be split into two, and five go there, five go with him, like that. But, and then the civilian was the one who was a shot firer. You did the graft. He bored the hole, fired it, then you did the shovelling, and you'd help to put the roofing up. And that was it.
That was the only job you did then, shovelling and put...
And filling, of course, when you're shovelling, of course, you're filling these bloody trucks, aren't you? What the ponies drag away.
And who took the ponies? Would that
civvy.
A civilian did what we call putting in this country.
Oh, I don't know what that is. No, the civvy, because obviously he's used to them, they understand his... It's command, shall we say. I mean, if we said war, I wouldn't have bloody hell to
so
do, would he?
You just loaded up the
tank. We loaded and he chucked them away.
What did you use to load? Just ordinary shovels?
Yeah, pan shovels, you know, the pan-shaped shovels. And it wasn't always pleasant. Well, it never is pleasant down a pit, as far as I'm concerned, but you could be working in water, seeping water, dampness. There was rock falls. Well, just walking in and coming out nice and white as you went in. There was rock falls. They even had to do a bit of sabotaging. And couple
I'll
of
ask
blood,
you about that. I'll come
trucks
to
that. And damage to themselves.
Now, so that's given us an hour. So you'd go up to the thing and then you'd be loading, you know, loading.
Well, very likely he might be ready to fire. Or he'd brought the hole the day before, and then he puts the charge in, and then he fires it, and then you start bloody shoveling. And then when you've shifted all that, it might be so much come down, it takes you a shift to move it. Then he fires another spot, and so on.
And what about putting the pit props in? That's not
and
easy.
Then at night time, that's more than generally done. Well, there are oops in those. About this 8 or 9 foot high, it's like a cavern effect, a roof.
So how did they get them down the mine?
Well, they're in by the shaft in pieces. You had them in sections.
So you'd have to put them together, would you?
Bolted together, and then they make a arc, and then placed in every so often, and then very Heath Robinson effort, bloody wooden wedges and that to hold them in and all that.
Was there anything
between? And a flat, yes, flat wood, flat planks. Yeah.
Between the hoops?
Yeah.
So it was like a roof effect?
A roof effect, yeah.
But they were just planks, were they?
Planks, but thick planks, yeah.
How thick? Two inches,
yeah.
So that'd keep quite a bit of...
Keep a bit out, yeah. But you'd still had, in places, there would still be... There'd still be weak spots, and that's where you got your fall, you know. Get a piece of that on your head, you would.
Who taught you how? I mean, that's still quite... It's quite
nobody taught us at all. They didn't... They couldn't teach us, number one, because we didn't know what the bloody hell they was talking about. It was all sign language, until we started picking a few words up, like Jim Dobley, good morning, and all that. Yakshi Mash, how are you? Jankweerdom. Jankweerkalega. Thank you very much. And all these you picked up, it's a slow process. And he was telling you, he'd point to bloody shovel and go like this, you see, there. You see, it was all bloody hand signs.
So that was the two things you did. You shovelled.
Shovelled, clear away, straightened up, helped with the roof if you're on nights, helped with the roof. They shot it in the morning.
You helped with the roof, so someone else...
Oh, supervised. Oh, Christ, I didn't leave it to us. No, their bloody life was in, wasn't it? Oh, yes. No, it wasn't. I mean, they wouldn't leave some bugger like us to do it. They did the graft.
What about, there's two sides of it. The water, you said, it was a wet mine.
Well, they seep. You could get in a section where it was as dry as the desert. Dry, choking dust, whatever you know. And another part, a bit seepage.
Was anything done to try and dry them up?
They said that mine at Sosnovich should have been condemned before the bloody war.
Why?
And because it did outstripped it. There was coal there, but... I mean, in England, if there's a mine, they don't take every bloody scrap of coal out of it till it's just other than coal left. There's a certain amount of coal left for as much as to say, well, if we took that out, there could be a terrible accident. So they leave well alone. You follow? I'm putting it in a layman's terms now. Now, according to Cocker, that mine should have been condemned for safety reasons long before the war. Before the war started.
Who was Cocker?
But,
Who was Cocker?
Oh, that's a phrase, didn't you know that? According to so and so. No, not a particular person.
Sorry, yeah.
It's
it was the rumour.
Yeah, according to the rumour, yeah. So, that should never have been in operation, that mine, but... Old Adolf, or his oppos, and his oppos was their idea was to get every bloody piece of coal out wherever, whatever, at whatever cost. Just whatever they lost, if they lost one civilian, it didn't matter and it didn't matter less still if there were 20 bloody POWs go with him.
What about? I mean, did you?
They're scraping the barrel.
There's two problems you've identified. Did the water, was that actually a threat to life, or was it just inconvenient?
It was inconvenient as much that you was working in bloody ankle deep water in some cases.
But it wouldn't actually flood.
Oh no! But it was just a natural seepage through. But it was it's nicer to work on dry land than in bloody water, isn't it?
But what about, so the real danger was these roof collapses?
Well, yes, and no one could forecast those because it could. You could just hear it and everything. You'd run like buggery then, you see.
Give us an example of. I mean, what would you hear?
Well, you see, you'd get it before. Where the shot fired, obviously there's a bloody dollop of coal comes out and you're shoveling away and there's no bloody roof up, is there? Number one, you're in an area working where there's no safety, no roof. And it's like a ceiling. If it's weak there, through some formation, which you couldn't, no bugger could find out about, through, and you get a crack and it, and then fine, what's it coming down? Whether it stopped at that, you're still bloody wrong, because if it didn't stop, there'd more come down. And then they'd patch it up.
And that happened to you?
I've been in, and when that's happened, yeah.
What about behind you? Were there ever any collapses behind you, you know, so to speak, blocking your way of escape?
Not to be able to bloody to get back to the shaft, no.
So the tunnels, so to speak, the workings were pretty safe.
The workings were pretty safe because these civvies had done the best to see that it was safe. But they wasn't even happy working in it because they knew of it should have been condemned.
The dangerous bit was at the end, then.
At the end, where the coal had been taken away, and you got a plain roof. Just rock. From the seam cut. That's it, the seam. The difference between the coal and the bloody rock it stuck to, in other words. And when they've got the coal away, you've just got the plain rock, and there's nothing holding it up. Now, some reason or other, naturally, it sticks up, but over a period of time, obviously, it would fall, wouldn't it? But that's the idea of putting the bloody supports up. When they'd completed a section, they used to drop it. After so far in, they'd drop it. But he wanted to go, these people wanted to go as far as he could and get as much as he could at.
So the pit props were only temporary, and after a while, how did they drop it? I mean, I don't quite understand. You know, when they dropped the roof back down, when they'd finished a bit.
Blow the props away, the thing is, yeah.
So that was the main risk. Were any of the POWs or yourself ever hurt in these falls? Not yourself, but I don't think from the sound of it, but were people killed or injured or trapped?
I've heard of no trap. Nobody was trapped, but I have heard of people getting a crack on the arm with a bloody cob of the roofing and breaking their arm.
What, a lump falling out?
The foot. Then they go back to Lambsdorff, and they're happy it happened.
Was it nerve wracking for you?
Well, you see, I've never been keen on being down below at all. So every shift was nerve wracking, and I haven't got to the worst part of my nerve wracking in a pit. Yeah. That was great to what was to come.
So that was your job. Now you were down there for 8 hours, but you've already said that.
It could take 10, 11.
Was the work, was it very tiring for you? This all this shoveling and.
Well, let's say that all you felt like, and when you come out, you was handed over from the civilian to the. The stag took hold of you then, and he sent you up in bundles, and of course he'd been on the blower upstairs, and they'd be waiting for you as you come out the shaft, counted again how many's coming out, then trundled across to the lamp room, you hand your lamp in, you hand your bloody knee pads in, your helmet in, you go into the shower house, the showers, cold, take your clothes off and leave your what's it on a peg, your overalls, shower, dry you, put your clothes on, come out, count it again, and march back to the camp, and the bloody fella who's in charge of the guard at the camp, he counts you coming in. So you take all that time in, counting, there's more time you need to count, it's working. By the time you get in, you maybe have some out your parcel if you've got out left, and you're in kip, buggered.
While you were down there, did you get any breaks while you were down there? I mean,
no, but you didn't take food down. You had no food to take down. The only break you got were when the civvy got his flask out and had his bloody old sawdust butty.
So you didn't have anything to eat, Dad?
No. No, nothing to drink.
What about, were safety precautions about cigarettes, matches enforced? Because they're often not allowed down mines with the gas.
Well, they never bothered about us with matches or cigarettes because I think nobody took them down. They might have done, I didn't, but there was no... There might have been notices up. But as I say, I wasn't a prolific... And I can't remember any bugger smoking down there. Maybe they didn't smoke because they was frightened.
Were you aware of the threat of gas? Or, you know, methane or whatever, coal dust?
I was scared. What I was scared of down there is the bloody claustrophobic, the roof, the water. I mean, it seeped, as you say, as I told you. But it was natural seepage, so they said. But there was always that. You're always frightened, weren't you? You know, it could be different than what they said.
You were frightened there
might
be a bit
not of gas, for the simple reason that you wouldn't have had a bare flame on your lamp. With it being gas. That was the only good thing about it.
So when did you get your daily ration?
Daily ration?
Your food.
Oh, hey. Well, 6 to 2 turn, you can imagine what time you got up, wouldn't you? Because, hey, and Jerry, you know, you was at the face, ready with your bloody shovel at 6 o'clock. So what time did you get up and be counted and Christ knows what all the way? To the what's it? To the face. He had you there at
about,
6 o'clock.
About what time would you be?
4. So past 3 to 4.
2 hours messing about.
Yeah.
And then 2 hours presumably after.
Coming back. So think of that. Up past 3 to 4 o'clock. And you're bugging about. And you got a drink of coffee. Or Ertzsass tea, whatever. Mint tea.
When you got up.
When you got up. That's it. Nothing else. And you did your shift. And you did your last bloody shovelful. At 2 o'clock. Prompt. No messing. So you've got his 8 hours. And you're coming back. So you can talk about up past 3, 4 o'clock time. Maybe a bit later, can't you? And the skilly's up then. For your evening meal. Oh, the meal of the day. And another drink. And it varied. You get a piece of Christ smelly German cheese. You got a piece of that some days. Besides your skilly and bread.
So you got a bit extra food when you were working, did you?
And a bit of meat.
Was that's extra from what you know?
Ah, but that's supposed to be bloody heavy rations because you're in a pit.
But it wasn't.
No. And in the huts where the stoves are, and you were working in a coal mine, you didn't get enough bloody coal. You were rationed.
To worse than Lansdorf for that again.
So, you can see, then, well, you've been up all that time, you had your meal at 4 o'clock, maybe getting towards 5. Later on, 7 o'clock time, you'd have a bit of something out of your parcel. If you'd got anything to read, or you wrote home, and that's it, you're in kit because you're up at 3:30.
Now, what happens if you... Was that always the same order? For instance, if you were on the 2 till 10
I'm
shift,
coming to that, aren't I? 2 to 10. Your first shovel falls at 2 o'clock.
What would
so
you
set off.
What would you have to eat before that, then? I mean...
You'd get it with them buggers at 11 o'clock, just after they'd had theirs, wouldn't you? You know the early turn? Not the early turn. What am I talking about? No, 4 o'clock. You'd have it at 11, that's right. You got a drink when they was getting fed, the early turn, and a meal about 11:30. Then you start counting. Then you're at the face for 2 o'clock. And then your last shovelful's at 10, so you can talk about midnight in. And you had to make yourself a drink or something out of your parcel. Also sad it and go to bed.
Now, you said
your night shift Shan o'clock at the face. But better. Use your cocoa with this. 10 o'clock. You'll get your afternoon. You have your meal at the afternoon. And maybe something out your parcel. You go at 10 o'clock. You're doing the roof job, aren't you? This was the unwritten law. And I must say, old Jerry stuck to it with a civilian because the bloody civilians wanted it and all. The quicker you did it, the sooner you got... Say this was blown and it no bloody roof, no support, and you come down, you had to start on that. The quicker you did it, so whenever you did it, up.
So you weren't kept for the full 8 hours?
If it took you till 6 o'clock, that's your bloody pigeon. But the civvies didn't want to stop till 6 o'clock. So the quicker you worked, and you worked hand in glove with them, you could maybe finish for about 1:30, 2 o'clock, or maybe 3:30. But it's always not 6 o'clock. He was glad to get home to his missus, and you wafted, he took you up, and there'd be a guard there at the top, and he'd take you back to your, what's it.
So that was the best shift to be on. Did your shifts change by week or month or...?
No. Every month, we got one day off. And it was a Sunday, as a rule.
That was your only day off?
One complete day off per month. And we used that for delousing. General cleaning, washing your clothes, doing jobs that you haven't the bloody time to do previously. Write a letter home. Go through your letters from home.
And that's when you change shift.
Yeah, make the blows, if you'd got one and it had broken.
But the point is, that's when you change shift.
That's when we had the day off. Now, if we come off, say, nights, early Sunday morning, from night Saturday night, and it's our day off, my day off on Sunday, we had all Sunday, well, from early hours, isn't it? All the Sunday, early hours, Saturday, Sunday night, 2 o'clock in the morning, Sunday morning, so we say 3 o'clock, you'd have the Sunday and start back on Monday at 6.
So you change shift?
So each week, 6 to 2, 2 to 10, 10 to 6.
So the monthly day off had nothing to do with changing shift?
No, it was just a day that you got, which, call it an entitlement or something they give you.
So the shift changing was just done weekly?
Weekly. 1 week, 6 to 2, next week, 2 to 10.